and come to mommy.
Welcome back, horror fans, to another episode of The Final Boys, a podcast that celebrates all things horror in cinema and pop culture. My name is Dustin.
And I'm Matt.
And every other week, Matt and I sit down to see if we can survive something spooky. This week, we watched a 2024 film, Late Night with the Devil, currently on Shudder. So if you'd like to watch Late Night with the Devil with us, go to shudder.com and use code FINALBOYS at checkout to get a free 30 days. But before we talk about that, Matt, have you done anything spooky this week?
Spooky? I'm trying to think if I did anything spooky. Not necessarily. I mean, no. I mean, you know, ruining the illusion again, but like tomorrow, you know, or technically I should say today, is Alien Day. So, I mean, I'm pretty stoked. And yeah, I don't know. I just watch Alien every year on this day. So that's kind of it for spooky for this week. I haven't watched anything like horror wise. I just know that the Silent Hill 2 remake's coming out pretty soon, or it's going to be teased in a few weeks. So I guess I'm excited. It could be dog shit. We don't know yet. But nothing spooky, man. Are you doing anything spooky now?
Dude. Yes. I'm sorry, that was a bait, because I wanted to talk about all the spooky things I did this week. I only did one spooky thing this week, and it was I saw Abigail in theaters.
That's fucking crazy. I literally saw an ad for that right before we started. Like, I had YouTube going on in the background before we hopped in here. And, like, yeah, I saw an ad for it. I'm like, wait, that's out already?
I didn't even know this was a movie, but someone asked me in IRL, did I see the vampire ballerina movie, and I said, I'm sorry, what? And then I looked into it, and it's by the same guys that made that did like Scream 5, one of the Scream movies, and Ready or Not, which is arguably a great movie.
Ready or Not's super fun, dude.
So really, good. Really fun. And yeah, it brings the same energy, honestly. The Abigail is, you can't go into it knowing, like, thinking that it's going to be like a masterclass in like horror cinema. It's just a good, fun movie. I really, really enjoyed it. The cast was awesome.
That's rad.
That's so rad. It's very much the same vein as like Ready or Not.
Oh, really? Dang.
Yeah, it's really, really good. I liked it a lot.
Ready or Not's super fun, man. I remember when that came out a couple years ago, and I think we all enjoyed it. It was just a good time. And so I'll be real, the Abigail bit that I saw, it was literally the little girl just like yelling into the camera was the clip I saw on YouTube, and I was like, I'm not interested in that at all.
It's so good. It's so good. It's so funny.
That's all they showed. It's funny. So, okay. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know it was out. I had no idea. So I guess Abigail's out, and you know, go check it out. Apparently it's good.
Yeah. It's a vampire really, ballerina. It's a fun little movie that like, I didn't even know it existed.
Yeah.
Until I saw it in theaters. Yeah.
No idea, dude. I had no idea about it. So that's cool, man. I'll have to check it out. It's funny. I definitely love them when they're a little bit more goofy and fun these days, for sure. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong, we love our actually scary shit, but sometimes it's just nice to turn your brain off and, you know, watch a fun one.
That's exactly what it was. Yeah, it's not going to win any awards, but it was just a solid movie that it's going to do great on streaming platforms, honestly.
Damn, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be really, really good. Cool. It's such a goofy little premise, and it's so stupid, and the whole trailer gives you everything you need to know about the movie, and it was still a blast to watch.
All I got from, like, it was seriously a YouTube, like, clip, and it was just a little girl yelling at the camera, or screaming into the camera, and it showed the title, and I'm like, I don't even know what this is.
What is this?
Yeah. But I know that the logo is like in the shape of fangs, so I'm like, all right, it's a vampire movie.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. Okay.
Yeah, I was like, that's cool. Wow. Dang, all right. Abigail. All right, okay. Got to check that out pretty soon. Anything else that's spooky that you got going on?
Yeah. I gave you a little hint of it before we started recording, but the Coyotes are leaving Arizona.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's spooky, huh?
That's scary, dude. Like,
how's that scary?
I mean, they were like, because I don't know, they were staples since like I moved here back in like the late 1990s. You know, it's just like I just remember going to the games for $20. It obviously got way more expensive when they moved to the ASU stadium. But it's just like it's sad. It's more maybe more sad than scary that they're finally leaving Arizona.
Where would the Arizona Coyotes go?
They're going to Utah. So we're keeping the rights to the name because I think we have like 4 years to like rebuild a NHL team or something like that. So we keep the name, but the Coyotes, Shane Doan's kid that just got like inducted into the Coyotes is now going to Utah.
Whoa.
So they went from Winnipeg. So they were the Winnipeg Jets. They couldn't keep them. They came to Arizona as the Phoenix Coyotes or Arizona Coyotes, I guess. And now they're going to Utah as a franchise.
Dang, dude. I mean, well, let's be real, man. You can't really keep ice around here anyway. It's too fucking hot. So.
That's true. It's way too hot. the sad thing is that no city wanted them or like would host them. They were in Glendale for so long.
Yeah, forever, that, like, dude.
But yeah, their time ran up there. They went to the ASU stadium for a bit, and I think there was like murmurings of Scottsdale, like taking him in, but they just couldn't get their shit done in time.
I mean, I'm sure it comes down to
2 years to make a stadium.
That's not enough time, and like you know, it just probably comes down to money. You know, building
it's money.
Stadium.
That's what it is. Yep.
Arizona's flush with money, dude. Let's be real. It's so expensive to live here. Holy shit.
Yeah. Where's my money going if it's not going to the Phoenix Coyotes?
You know, it's probably going to, like, you know, the what's that one guy? He's like a shaman. He got arrested for, you know, stampeding towards the Capitol. That guy? Yeah, fuck that guy.
That guy's from Arizona?
Yes, dude.
I did not know that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Our claim to fame, baby.
That's a terrible claim to fame.
That's scary too. Oh, all these spooky things are happening all of a sudden.
Yeah, no shit. But yeah, dude, that's crazy. I had no idea. So they're going to Utah. All right. Yep. I mean, that's not too far away if you want to go see the Coyotes. They just won't be the Arizona Coyotes anymore. Or if they were the Phoenix.
Yeah, they're not going to. Well, they won't be the Coyotes at all either. But so they'll be another team.
So we'll have Phoenix Coyotes back again in probably like 5 years.
Hopefully. Yeah, you know. I don't know. Oh, you know, hopefully we can get a soccer team going. Maybe the Phoenix Rising will be an MLS team.
That'd be kind of cool too.
You know what? I'll trade. This is hot. This is a little taboo of me, but I'll trade our hockey team for an MLS team.
I think most countries around the world would agree with the football team, the soccer team. You know, so I don't know. I don't know, man. That's crazy shit. I had no idea. Well, that's weird because I was just talking about going to a hockey game. Turns out that's not a thing anymore. So
you probably can go to a couple more before they're officially gone. But
yeah, they're at ASU right now, right? They're in Tempe. So
yeah.
Oh well. I mean, they're just fun to go to. Plus, you can, like, you know, eat overpriced food and enjoy the ice cold weather.
Why? You know how much I love hot dogs, outside. Dude,
hot dogs and fucking cold weather, man. I'll take it.
Yep.
That's crazy, dude. So that is spooky, you know?
Yeah.
That is spooky. No more howling at the moon. Yeah. That was the whole Coyotes thing. That is like a 90s nostalgia thing burning into my brain forever now. Mm-mm.
You start watching Fallout at all?
No, I didn't, dude. I've heard nothing but good things about Fallout. Did you?
I started watching the show, but I've never really played the games. I think I played... what was the one... Before 76. Fallout 76 was like the MMO, or was supposed to be, rather.
Like Fallout 4? That was the last one.
Fallout 4. Yeah. I think I played that one a little bit, but like, I couldn't really get into it.
Yeah, I'll be real, dude. Like, Bethesda games don't really click for me.
That's what it is. I think it's Bethesda that I don't love.
I mean, they're all the same formula, which is fine, because they have like these massive worlds, and they're RPGs, and there's a lot of great in them. Like, you know, Morrowind was the shit. I love Morrowind. Oblivion was fine. And then, of course, everyone loves Skyrim. But, yeah, I've tried Fallout a couple times. It just doesn't click for me, but I love the aesthetic. I love the world building. Yeah. Just the gameplay. It's just not for me personally, but I get why everyone loves it. Funny you mention that is because today Fallout 4, the update came out for it, the next-gen update.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. So pushing the consoles to like have better graphics and stuff. But apparently it was botched. So apparently there's a lot of issues and a lot of the PC mods don't work any longer. So I saw that this morning. But yeah, I mean, if, now's the time to jump back to it, man. They fixed or updated it, I guess. Not fixed it.
Yeah. The show's amazing. The show's really good. The cast is awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how much of a fan service it is, but there are funny parts in it. So I'm assuming the things that I don't understand like right away from the show is like fan service, mm-hmm. which I appreciate.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, man. I mean, I've heard it's like one of the best video game adaptations done yet, which is cool.
Wow.
I like Walton Goggins a lot. He's fucking awesome, yeah, dude. He's me so too. Funny.
Yeah.
He's so funny.
Have you seen The Righteous Gemstones? He plays like the uncle. Dude,
yeah,
Billy Bobby Bonkers.
He's so funny. Him. Yeah, he's like my favorite part of Vice Principals. Same creative team. That's obviously. Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Walton Goggins is so damn funny. But yeah, I'm gonna start it soon. I'm pretty stoked. I'm actually want to start that and Shogun, but
I'm
behind. You know, I'm just kind of cruising. Cruise through life, playing Zelda. You know, that's what I'm doing right now. So, just chilling, dude. Nothing crazy. But I'm glad you like it.
Finished Breath of the Wild yet, or what?
I mean, yeah, a long like seven years ago.
Okay. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. No. Tears of the Kingdom.
How far back? Tears of the Kingdom, which are on. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's cool.
I've never finished Breath of the Wild. I started it and I stopped. I put it down right away. Almost.
It's huge, dude. It's such a big game.
It is a big game. I don't know. Lost. I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with me.
No, I mean, I get it.
There's something short-circuiting my brain.
I get it. It's so much to it, you know, but it is a really cool game once you get going. But, I mean, Tears of the Kingdom came out almost a year ago already, and, like, I'm just now finally, like, getting hooked into it.
Okay.
Because I couldn't. I just couldn't, like, I bought, like, I got, like, the collector's edition game and the console, and, you know, I didn't get into it for some reason. I'm like, man, I've already played this game. So a year later almost now I'm like, oh, okay, it's nice again.
Yeah.
So yeah, man, maybe hopefully you'll play Breath of the Wild sometime. It's a really good Zelda game. It's peaceful and scary at the same time.
I think Ocarina of Time will forever live my favorite Zelda game. I think I played too much of that. Mm-hmm. I played Ocarina of Time so Breath of the Wild could run, you know.
True.
Wait, I don't. That doesn't make sense, but yeah. you know the sentiment.
What you're trying to say.
I walked in Ocarina of Time, so Breath of the Wild could run.
So you walked as Link in Ocarina of Time, so Link in Breath of the Wild could run.
In the heavy iron boots is what I did the whole game. Nice. Heavy iron boots all the way through.
Damn, that's a slow game.
Yeah,
you're like the water temple. It's the whole fucking game, dude. That's funny.
That's the only. Ocarina of Time is the only time that I've ever bought a cheat guide. Remember how at the supermarkets you could buy like the like cheat guides?
Was it like an official?
Yeah.
Was it a strategy guide?
Strategy guide. That's what I meant. Yeah.
Nice, dude. Was it an official one? Because I remember they used to have like almost like other brands would make them. And they would be on, like, newsstands, right? Like, magazine stands.
Dude, do you remember going to, like, Safeway and then, like, your mom would be shopping and you'd go right to the magazines and go to, like, the game section?
Dude, always, yeah. You'd look for, like, Game Informer or, like, not even Game Informer. What was before that? Like, Nintendo Magazine was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you had to order those order those through the mail, too. But, yeah, looking for video game magazines and... I'd always be blown away by like the PC ones. I'm like, what the fuck is this PC world?
Yeah, that. So crazy. It was for me. It was Zelda and Mortal Kombat. Like, I wanted to know everything about Mortal Kombat, all the finishing moves, everything. Like, Bless my parents. They bought me so many Mortal Kombat strategy guides.
You're like, how do I do this move with Baraka, dude? How do I do this? That's tight. That's really fucking cool. Damn. The 90s were crazy, man.
The good old days, huh? Yeah.
Now you just go on the internet and you can type it in and see Baraka's butthole, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen a little bit of Baraka's butthole, dude. Like, let me tell you.
Damn, that's crazy, man. That's fucking nuts. You know, besides gaming, though, nostalgia-wise, I will say this up front about this movie that we watched. Visually, I think it works, man. I think that this shit fucking works. So I was really happy to see that they were leaning into a certain aesthetic, which I think I'm going to assume that you liked, but we'll see.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, a little bit before the 90s, maybe like 70s,
early 80s. Late 70s.
What do you say we give our listeners a minute to go watch the movie, now playing on Shudder, 2024 Late Night with the Devil?
Mm.
Use code FINALBOYS at checkout for a free 30 days. Also, if you're listening to this on Apple iTunes, podcast, and you're liking the show, give us 5 stars. It helps out the podcast. But
very sweet of you. Yeah, we'll give them a few moments here, and they can check out Late Night with the Devil.
All right. So we just got done watching Late Night with the Devil, a live television broadcast in 1977. It goes horribly wrong, unleashing evil into the nation's living rooms. This movie is directed by I'll have you say it, Matt. Go for it.
Me? This is directed by the Cairns brothers, Cameron and Colin. And
good.
Yeah, I mean, it's written and directed by them. And I'm going to say right up front, good job. Good job.
Well done, baby.
Yeah, right?
Well done. It's starring David Dastmalchain, which he's not a household name, but he's been in literally everything. I've seen him in Law and Order SVU. Mm-hmm. He's in The Rookie. He was a Dot in The Suicide Squad. Like, mm-hmm. He's got like a bunch of small like roles and like bigger franchises, mm-hmm. but the Coens brothers really let him. Let him flourish as the main character in this movie.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I mean, he's, like you said, he pops up in everything. I watched Boogeyman late last year and was like, he's in that as well.
That's right,
And what was the Nosferatu one? The Last Voyage of the Demeter, that like, the boat movie? He was in that as well. Like,
I really enjoyed that movie.
Yeah, and he's in all the Ant-Man movies as well, which is cool.
Yeah.
So he's in a little bit of Marvel too, and DC. So he's he's all over the place, which is cool. I'm going to say it up front, he kills it in this role.
I think so. I mean, why are we giving him more leading man roles? I mean, this guy fucking rocks.
Yeah, dude, he's great. He's so good, man. He's definitely he's the main character, Jack Delroy. And then you have Laura Gordon, who plays Dr. June Ross Mitchell.
Yeah.
Then you have... Babe. And then you have like Jack Delroy's I guess sidekick, Gus McConnell, played by Rhys Autry.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with him. What else is he in?
I don't know.
He's just a nice dude.
I'm not sure. Yeah. So he's his sidekick, Gus McConnell, played by Rhys Autry. I've not seen him in anything, to be honest with you. So he's great. I thought he was really good in the role. But then you have Lily, played by Ingrid Torelli. And then the list goes on and on and on and on, and we'll get through them all. But cast was great, dude. I thought everyone played the role really, really well. But how does this movie kick off, dude? Like, it's broken up perfectly. It's broken up really well, I should say. And how does it start?
So it starts off with a ton of exposition. Which normally I don't like, but I think it does it kind of in a clever way. We learn about the 1970s and the satanic panic that's going on. So it's definitely setting up something that we, as the audience, don't know yet. But we talk about David's character, Jack Delroy, about how he is a late night host that's competing with Johnny Carson. So the it does this like really fun thing of like it's trying to like shoehorn itself into like real American historical pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
He's fighting for ratings with Johnny Carson, who mm-hmm. is like, you know, the late night king mm-hmm. in the 70s and 80s. And then sprinkling in like, you know, what's happening, you know, the different cults, the different, the murders that are happening. We're getting all of this like right up front and we're figuring out who Jack Delroy is as a person. You know, he's just a humble man, trying to entertain America as a late night talk show host. He seems like a good dude, you know, like, you know, he has a wife. Who we find out later is you know severely ill, and I we find out actually like right away, right? Like his wife dies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Of cancer.
Right away, introduced right away that Madeline, like they introduce the story of him and Madeline, how like they are absolutely in love.
Like, yeah, like the Hollywood couple, you know.
Uh-huh. But they're not like hot-headed, like they're mm-hmm. truly like they care about each other and people, and then he finds out that his best friend, you know, she's got terminal cancer, and so that's like introduced right away that yeah. Madeline passed away.
Yeah, so we just get all this stuff, and then we get shoved right into his. It's like that found footage style thing where it's like, and this is the, you know, this is the backlog tapes of like what really happened that night, which. I have questions about the end of this movie, and you know maybe we can talk through it.
Mm-hmm.
But it left me kind of stumped as far as like mm-hmm. what really happened. But I don't know. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like you're introduced to all these concepts. Like he's competing for ratings, and then they introduce like the fact that it's like kind of briefly mentioned, but they did show a bunch of like footage of it that Jack was part of. Kind of like a group called the Grove.
Bohemian Grove kind of thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like yeah. a grove that was like a summer camp for the rich and powerful up in the right. Redwoods, right, in Northern California. And, you know, apparently he got some questions about that, but he was brushed it off. And then, so after Madeline passes away, after his wife passes away, he takes a break, you know, he takes a month break because he's obviously heartbroken. And he comes back, and you know they're worried about ratings, and they're worried about their sponsors, and so he has to do something big to get back on top. He wants to be king.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is where we're at in the movie. It's it starts, yeah. and it is Halloween night, 1977,
right.
and they are promising to have the most shocking live late night TV episode of all time, and that's where we kick it off.
Yeah.
And dude, this movie does such a good job of like. Doing those segments in exposition where I don't get mad, but they do it a couple times.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they sure do. Yep.
Because it's like edited so well and cut up into segments that would are really nice. But yeah, you're introduced to Jack and Gus and the band and the audience and the crew and all that stuff. They show a live television show being broadcast, and he's a late night host, and he is stunning in the role for real.
Absolutely. I mean, it's like I couldn't imagine anybody else playing this character because he just does it so well.
Yeah.
But like you said, Matt, it's 1977, Halloween night. They got to do something big for ratings, and we kind of get like a lot of behind the scenes, like dialogue about like what's being actually televised and like. The, you know, the Nelson reports and, you know, how they're doing and shit like that, which I really, really appreciated. But the concept is that he's going to have on a multitude of guests. We're going to have a psychic.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have someone that denies all psychic abilities. So the psychic is...
Christo.
The great Christo, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's going to do some live readings. We have the denier, Carmichael Haig, who is based off of the amazing James Randi, who started off as a magician that turned into like almost like a charlatan denier. So he had this like he had the like James Randi Foundation. That might not be exactly what it's called, but you know our listeners will let us know for sure. where he would offer $1 million to someone to prove that they have either psychic abilities or that the paranormal exists. Mm. And the $1 million still has not been claimed to this day.
Damn.
It's like people think that he's a charlatan in his own right, but like I think it's really cool because like it seemed like he was open-minded enough of being like, he's a magician. He knows all these tricks, how to bend spoons, and he was kind of like one of the first guys of being like, what was that show on? Like it was like on ABC of like Behind the Magician's Code is what it was called.
Oh, remember that show? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where like they would show you how the tricks are done. Mm-hmm. Like this is a big mirror, all this shit.
Yeah.
So the James Randi kind of did that. And he was like the first person to really do that. Like, listen, someone that says that he can bend spoons with his mind, he's like, I can bend spoons with my mind. Heck, I can break spoons with my mind. And he'll like do it live on television for people. He's like, this is all like magic tricks. So I do like that character as well, of like the denier, I guess.
Yeah.
And we also have the...
He's like a skeptic, you know.
Yeah, he's a skeptic. And then we also have June Ross Mitchell, who's like a psychologist, doctor, and Lily, who's going to be kind of like bookend the show. So we have the psychic, the denier, and then she's got 1 foot into the scientific realm and then 1 foot into like the ethereal realm, who can talk to a demon that happens to be living inside this girl's body.
So yeah, Dr. June Ross Mitchell, you're right. She was a parapsychologist is the wording. And Carmichael Haig right away is just like, oh, you know, it's not a real thing. You know, it's not a real degree. You're not even a real doctor. And she's like, I went to like Yale or something, you know, whatever she went. So she went to an actual school, but parapsychology is really interesting. And that's what I wanted to bring up. It's like the study of psychic phenomena. And some people, like Carmichael Haig, is the perfect person to kind of rebuttal against it, because what they do is they try to study telepathy, paranormal activity, anything that's kind of abnormal, right? It's kind of considered like pseudoscience in a way. And a lot of scientists completely reject the idea of it. So this character Carmichael Haig is like very against it, but we're introduced to Dr. June Ross Mitchell and Lily, you know, right. And they are obviously the most interesting part of this whole movie because it gets fucking weird.
Yeah.
But we'll get to them in a second, and then there's also like a musical guest that we never get to actually see.
That's right.
There's also a musical guest that we never get to see. So the first guest comes out, and it's the wonderful Christo, right?
Yeah.
He comes out, and he is a psychic. Apparently, he can speak to the dead. And, dude, we all know this song and dance at this point, where he comes out there, and he's like, all right, I need everyone's concentration. And immediately, he's like, oh, I hear a Peter, you know, in the audience.
Yeah, right.
Peter. And he starts searching for the audience for someone to rebuttal so he can feed off of it.
Right. It's like cold readings.
He's doing cold readings, baby. And cold readings are really fascinating because like it does take a skill set to kind of like manipulate an audience like that.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But that's what you're doing. You're manipulating people, and it's super fucked up. Let's be real. So he's doing cold readings, and it becomes like a big joke because like they end up getting this guy in the audience where he's just like, yeah, Peter Mindy comes up there. He's like, oh, you know someone named Peterson. He's like, no, my ex-wife's middle name was Peterman. Has nothing to do with, you know, what he's searching for. And he's like, oh, her name was Elizabeth and she's dead. He's like, well, I mean, she might as well be. We're divorced, you know? Just some humble fucking...
Yeah, it's laughing at the audience, yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
Just giggling. But the reason I'm bringing all of this up is because I thought there was going to be a fucking, like, Chekhov's gun or something here. Because right next to that guy was a gentleman in a full skeleton suit. It's Halloween night, right? He's fully dressed up in a skeleton suit. And Jack makes a joke about the skeleton suit, right? And at points throughout this movie, maybe it was just something that we noticed, but I don't know if you noticed this as well, kept seeing the skeleton guy. They kept, like, the camera kept kind of zooming up on him, right, or showing him in the background, and I'm like, what does this guy have to do with the story? He ends up being like a red herring, you know? Like, right. Maybe, yeah. I overthought it the whole time. I was like, this is going to be something creepy with this guy, or he's manipulating something. He has nothing to do with it, dude. He's just kind of there in every frame.
They did end up having a Chekhov's gun in the movie, but it wasn't him. He was the red herring. Yeah, which is another trope, I guess. But like, I love all of these segments. There's like, is so well done and like so, not necessarily believable, but like, as an audience member, you're like, you're just entertained the whole time. You're like, this is something that happens on talk shows or like on late night shows where it's unscripted live. Anything can happen. And I liked Christo's character. He was very foreign and funny, and like you shit eventually does hit the fan with this character.
Mm-hmm.
What a funny saying, shit hitting the fan. I mean, I just now thought about that. It's just like, that's a mess you don't want to deal with.
Like shit hitting a fan?
Hitting a fan, yeah.
I mean, yeah, you shouldn't be throwing shit to begin with, but if it hits the fan, that's like, well, that's what's
about to happen with this guy.
Well, yeah.
But like, things get serious, and like, he stops talking in his accent, and he's like, there's something fucking wrong. There's a bad spirit here. But he ends up doing a cold reading on a mom and daughter and getting a lot of the stuff right. And we'll see maybe why later. But he starts, something's happening. The lights are kind of flickering. There's a dark presence here. Christo obviously has enough psychic ability to know that something's happening. Maybe he is a little bit of like a charlatan as far as like how to grift and make money, but like he is in tune enough to know that something's happening, and he starts having a fucking brain aneurysm live on TV as we're like, you know, watching him, and he tries to sit. I like how they have him, they're like, okay, we're gonna have our next guest out, and he's like sitting there like fucking dying almost.
Dude, he looked miserable. So like, he's screaming out into the audience. He's like, someone accept, right? I'm looking for someone. Right. The name's Minnie, and no one accepts. And so he kind of chills out, and they sit him down, like you said, and like, dude, his eyes are kind of sunken in. He's sweating profusely. He's like coughing and breathing really heavy. His nose is bleeding.
Yeah.
This guy's like literally suffering. They're like, oh, good dying job hamming it up. Literally dying, dude. They're like, good job hamming it up, you know?
Meanwhile, we have Carmichael Hague coming up here telling him everything's fake, and this dude's like miserable in the chair next to him.
He's miserable. The juxtaposition
is fucking amazing. Yeah.
Dude, it's this movie's considered like a comedy horror movie, and like the comedy's like, it's not so, I mean, it's there, but it's not just like laugh out loud style comedy. It's just it's goofy, but it works. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. It's very subtle. It doesn't take you out of the moment at all. It's not stupid. It's just really well done, right? And so, that juxtaposition, like you're saying, there's this miserable guy, and they're trying to put makeup on him, and he's, like, suffering. And then Carmichael Hague already is like, yeah, you're fake. He's just...
Yeah.
Carmichael Hague, the actor Ian Bliss that plays him is just, like, hams it up, dude. He's so douchey in this role, and it's very effective. And so we're introduced to him, and he's like you said, the denier, the skeptic, the know-it-all, and he's got the money to back it, right?
Right.
He's the magician. And right away, he starts trying to debunk everything that Christo did, and Christo is just, like, miserable, dude.
Yeah. I like the brief, like, intermissions of, like, what's happening. Like, I think they cut to even black and white for some things, where they're, like, it's like behind the scenes, like what's happening. You're getting the ratings report, and the producer's like, "You're fucking killing it, bro. Just keep this guy alive for a little bit longer, because it's like, we're fucking crushing it right now. Like, this is good." Like you said, Carmichael starts denying him right away. He says, "How many people like filled out like an audience like a survey beforehand? And like, did you not put on your survey that you lost, you know, a parent or a guardian?" What he's doing is legitimate, like calling, you know, Christo out for his cold readings.
Yeah, he is calling him out. I mean, that's his job, right? He's there to be the denier, the skeptic, the sound of reason, right? And so he's calling this all out, and Christo is just like, going through this thing, and eventually Christo gets like offended, and he's like, I'm done with this shit, and he starts storming off, and he tries to leave through like the entrance kind of walkway door thing, and it's blocked, and he like buckles over, and he starts like making all these like guttural sounds, and they're fucking very evil sounding. And, you know, Carmichael's like, oh, look, another act. And then immediately Christo like vomits up like this black goo all over the stage and all over Carmichael Haig, and ruins his nice jacket, you know?
Yep.
And this is where they wheel him away. Like, it cuts the commercial, you know, Jack's like, and we'll go to our sponsors, and cuts back to the black and white, like 16 millimeter shots, like the side camera stuff, which I actually really liked. Normally I'd be like, can't stand that, but I love that it looks completely different, so you know it's behind the scenes. Enough.
Right, yeah, yeah.
I love that, dude. It works really well. Instead of just being like a weird disembodied camera, you know it's behind the scenes stuff. And so, yeah, Christo's kind of wheeled off, and we get like a side conversation. So you have Dr. June, Ross Mitchell, and you have Jack, and they're talking backstage, and she's like, I don't think we should go forward with the presentation with Lily on live television. I don't think we should do it. I'm not for it. And Jack's producer's like, what, is she getting cold feet now, you know? And that all kind of adds to the scene a little bit more, because you could tell that the doctor and Jack have like a relationship behind the scenes. Because he tries to get really close to her, but he's also trying to keep a little bit of distance so no one sees them like touching, you know? So clearly like they're in something, they're in some sort of relationship. And he's like, we need to do this segment. The numbers are going to be crazy. It's going to make your book super popular. You're going to blow up, and you and Lily are going to be successful, right?
Right.
So he's literally trying to help her, but also he's trying to help himself at this point.
Oh, yeah, trying of course. To get those numbers up.
So, yeah, we're introduced to Lily and Dr. June Ross Mitchell, and it does another one of those segments that you were talking about, the exposition.
Right.
And it like cuts away and explains the whole backstory of Lily.
Yeah, so we find out that Lily was born into a cult.
Yeah.
And was destined to be kind of sacrificed, maybe? I don't I mean, that's kind of unclear, maybe. I don't know. But then they kind of had like almost a like a Waco style raid on their compound. And there's like so many like ties to real life in this. It's just like
it's insane.
It
dude.
Makes it fun and like believable. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely grounded in real life. A lot of it's grounded in real life. You know, between the Satanic Panic and you know Waco and all the different serial killers going on trial and the cults that were behind the serial killers. This was this was kind of like a Leviathan. Who was the guy of the satanic cult?
So the whole cult part, I mean, it was clearly making fun of Anton LaVey and the Church of Satan.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, right. Like straight up, dude. Like there was a shot of the cult leader, because they show them doing like these rituals and they're explaining it like you stated, about like them giving birth to children and raising them and using them for human sacrifices. But the cult leader, his name's Xander Diabo. There's a shot of him sitting there with the backdrop and his like red lapel shirt and his pentagram around his neck. Dude, it's straight up. It's Anton LaVey. Like he's got a goatee. He's talking like very calm and straightforward. And I'm like, yeah, this is a play on the 1970s, late 60s Anton LaVey Church of Satan, right? Mm-hmm. They just didn't understand it. So it was the Satanic Panic. And yeah, so Lily was born into the Church of Abraxas, as they're calling it, to be a sacrificed child or to maybe birth a demon of some sort. And it is like a Waco kind of event where they're holed up there for 3 days and there's like firefights and whatnot. And Lily's the only survivor, you know?
Right. Everything burns to the ground except for Lily, who survives and is putting in the care of June Ross Mitchell, the parapsychologist, who is not only like, who's almost like a mother, like almost like adopts her as like a child, as far as like caring for her, really learning about her. And we get that exposition of like, you know, their kind of relationship and what June can bring out of Lily as far as like understanding her more, and finds out that there is something living inside her, whether it's a demon or, you know, another personality. And that's kind of what June's book is about. It's, you know, talking with the devil or speaking with the devil. Because, you know, Lily was supposed to be the chosen one as far as, you know, Diablo was concerned. Mm-hmm. And having, you know, something, a demon living inside her.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, Lily, she goes through all of that, and then right away when she comes out, she's almost, like, familiar with Jack, which is kind of something that ties back into all of it later. But is that the vibe you got? Like, I mean, she says a few things, like, oh, yeah, we've met before, Jack. And he's like, what? Right. No, we haven't. You know? but she's gone through all of this, and he's like, I've never met this child before. She survived, like, this cult, and I have no idea who the hell this is. Right. But she's almost, like, too comfortable, right?
Right.
A little odd, a little off-putting in ways, but still seems just like a 10, 11-year-old girl, right?
Creepy. She's so creepy, but it's, you know, she plays the character so well. Like, it's
dude,
cute, innocent, but also, like, terrifying and threatening.
100%, dude. She, like, plays it perfectly where it's like, you nailed it. You're like, oh, it's just a kid. In ways, you're like, okay, she's doing, like, a cutesy thing. Now you're being creepy as fuck.
Yeah. Stop being so creepy.
Yeah, it, like, jumps back and forth between it. And there's even a couple parts where the audience laughs because she's almost, like, comedic, but it's, like, not intentional, I don't think.
Right.
It's just so well done. I mean, I think that all the actors
nailed the way they're all playing off each other is just, you know, they each have their roles and they're sticking to it, which I no one really falters from, like, from their task, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jack Delroy, the reason why he's so charming and lovable and, like, America's sweetheart and trying to make the best of, like, the situations and kind of being the mediator between everything, but as a host, you know. I love Gus's character. Gus,
yeah,
it's at some point Gus is like, he's the sidekick until he's just like, I don't want to do this anymore, like, this is kind of fucked, you know. like he breaks Gus really fast, but it's funny that his character breaks because it's like he is just the sidekick to Jack. He's like, not that he's a nobody, but he's like I don't have to be here for this, like, this is not my deal. We don't have to do this anymore. He's begging Jack to stop at every moment. Yeah, and then you have June, who is, you know, the parapsychologist, plays her great. Carmichael Haig is denying the fuck of it ever. No one ever falters from their role, which is you know, consistency wise, it's really nice to see, like, a character, you know, building a character from start to finish, and, like, they're just that character.
Yeah. The whole time. They're in that character the whole time. And I do like Gus's character, which we'll talk about again in a second. But we're just getting introduced to, like, Lily and how creepy she is. And she's staring directly into the lens, dude. Just talking through the lens into the audience, into the homes of America. And, like, it works. It's so effective, dude. Because there was times I'm like, shit, that's really creepy. And she wasn't doing anything. She was just answering Jack's questions and talking to them. And, you know, Carmichael Haig is just talking shit about Dr. June and what she does. And they decide to proceed forward with the experiment. You know, there's a little bit of conflict, of course, between the main characters, but they end up deciding to do it. And that's where Gus comes backstage and he's like, half the crew is going to walk right now. We don't want to do this. Jack, you shouldn't do this. You know, it's not sane. Calling him out. And he's like, this is evil. And Jack's like, just chill out, just do it, you know? And so, yeah, they decide to proceed forward with an exorcism, pretty much, or a ritual, as they were calling it. And yeah, they strap this young girl down to a chair, as you would in any other exorcism film. And, you know, Dr. June Mitchell, she does a whole bit where she's going to go ahead and, you know, summon this demon. And do you remember what Lily called the demon?
No, I don't.
It was like, is it Mr. Wriggles? Was that his name?
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
And yeah, so that's what they named him, because she said that he's like trying to wriggle out of her body, you know?
Right.
That's what it feels like. So, dude, you want to walk us through the exorcism part? Because this part's sick.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, it's very serious. Everything kind of goes, like, because Tim, we're really focused on June and Lily and trying to find the nuance between their conversations. And there's a couple jabs at Jack. Like you said, you know, Mr. Riggles has met Jack before.
Yeah.
And shit just starts going crazy. You know, lights flicker. She starts levitating. And June has to pull the plug. Like, she's just like, we can't do this anymore. Meanwhile, there is some very specific props that are brought out from... you know, the Lily's church that was used, like the knife that gets sat right by Jack's table and stays there pretty much for the entire film. But like, we get kind of an inside look on like what's living inside Lily, whether it's real or not. You know, Carmichael will debate it soon, but like some really freaky stuff starts happening, and like Christo said many, and I think when they go to the commercial one of these times, Jack's like, you know, he's like, I think maybe he was trying to talk to me. Like, I called my wife many, like, plenty of times. Like, there's starting to be like more and more like things that just happen to be coincidences or like, you know, guesses that's starting to kind of relate to Jack. So Jack's kind of like starting to buy in on a lot of this stuff. And then, you know, Mr. Riggles starts talking directly to Jack, even though, you know, June's trying to keep it very much focused on her. But it's hard when you're doing it in front of a live audience, because they're going to gasp, they're going to be shocked, they're going to be scared. And it's really not helping the situation at all.
I kind of like that. That scene is so powerful because, like, yeah, whenever Lily, or I guess Mr. Riggles, is, like, doing any demonic shit, whether it's making noises or the chair levitating or scaring the audience, I love that the doctor keeps trying to, like, calm the audience down. She's like, shh, you know, like, shushing the audience and trying to get everyone to stay quiet in the room dark and continue to be focused. But, you know, pandemonium breaks out and, like, lights flicker, things explode, a little bit of electricity kind of surging around. And, you know, it's crazy because, like, Lily's face changes. It's definitely, like, cut up and, like, grim, and it's not her. It's clearly some other being inside of her. And it clearly changes. And then the ritual is completed. You know, they end it. And Carmichael Haig's like, I can debunk all of this, right? You know? He's like, these are all tricks. He's like, this was really good work, but this is all fake. And like you stated, dude, Jack's kind of buying in all of it. He's like, did you see that? Like, her face changed. That wasn't her. She had cuts and gashes on her face, and that wasn't her. She was talking different. And then even the doctor was like, she was fucking levitating, dude. That's not normal shit. And he's like, I can prove all of this.
Right.
And so they go to another break, and like, of course, behind the scenes stuff happens where it's like, well, most of the cast or crews left, you know, right? Our numbers are through the roof, and like, his producer's like, we're back, dude. We did it. We're killing it right now. Just finish up the episode, you know, and we're good.
Yeah.
And it goes back to like Carmichael's segment, and this is where we get like him trying to debunk the whole night.
This is where it jumps the shark just a little bit here. There's moments of this movie that I don't absolutely love, and this is kind of... This might be one of them. This and the ending, just because it's like, I don't think it needed this segment. I think we could have kind of finished, but like Carmichael has to debunk it, and he debunks it in like the strangest way. So, I'll talk about why I don't like it afterwards. But Carmichael uses Gus as his experiment, and then us as the audience, we think that all this crazy shit's happening. You know, he's saying like, hey, guess what are you most afraid of? Worms. Okay, do you feel like you're itchy? And he's like, yeah, I feel like I'm itchy. And then he starts like fucking ripping open his body. We see all these like bugs coming out and the whole audience is shocked and crazy. And then we just come to. Carmichael's like, mm-hmm. it was all fake. I made you believe that this happened, mm-hmm. which I don't think that like mass hysteria really works that way as far as like, yeah. How it's shown. But I mean, it's interesting. It's just like, I feel like this is when the movie, it's so weird to say that it jumps the shark here because it's like, this whole movie's make-believe, right? Nothing is real. We have an unreal thing happening in an unreal movie. But there's a suspension of disbelief up until here where he tries to prove that it's not real, right? So then they review the tapes and they're like, nothing happened to Gus. You know, like everything was made up. He's like, there might have been one or two of you in the audience that didn't see the picture that I was painting, and that's on you. That's good for you. Your willpower is a little bit stronger, but everybody else kind of bought into the picture I was painting, right? And so they reviewed the tapes, and they're like, oh, okay, nothing really happened. We see what really happened, and it was just everybody doing make believe stuff. But then Lily has the idea of like, well, why don't we just watch back my tapes then? Like, if you don't think this was all... Like, Lily now... Lily doesn't look like a demon, but like... But she's kind of playing the audience now. I feel like there was a threshold with Lily and we crossed it. And now mm-hmm. it's the demon acting as Lily. At least that's kind of the vibe I'm getting. They're like, well, why don't we just watch my tapes then? If, you know... And they're like, that's a good idea. But also they were... the funny thing is like... Jax... Like... His time was up. His allowed time slot for his show is like over. And Lily's like, well, can we watch mine? And they're like, can we just stay on the air for a little bit longer? Like, and just watch it? And everybody's amazed because what happened with Lily, her face changing, her levitating, they have all like evidence of that. There was no ruse, no coaxing, like it all happened.
Yeah. It's all real stuff.
And then shit gets really fucking weird.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get what you're saying. I personally really liked the hypnosis part. I really like that whole like him inducing hysteria to the audience and hypnotizing them. I really dig it. I just think it's like not done often enough. So I was like, oh, that's a really interesting take on it. And I do like what you mentioned, how he calls out how like not everyone would fall under his spell. But yeah, I mean, right away I was like, well, how come we're not reviewing Lily's tapes? And then right away they were like, let's review Lily's tape. And I'm like, oh shit, here we go.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's all real. It's terrifying as fuck. And I love how, like, they're sitting there watching it, and Carmichael's like, well, we might have to take some of these tapes in for analysis. I mean, I don't
know. Yeah, right, right. He's like, he's kind of
still not believing it.
Right? Money's like, on the line, right?
I'm pretty sure that, you know, he even stated that, it, you know, if it was on tape that, or one of them states that if it's on tape, it legitimately happened. And, like, you know, his theory is debunked his theory is proven, I should say, with Gus, and then of course they show Lily's, and he's like, I don't believe that, you know.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah,
it's so funny, dude. But yeah, it's totally when shit gets real, because I mean, this is the end of the film pretty much, and it just gets fucking weird. Lily goes full demon, dude, like straight up. She gets electrocuted.
Oh, there was one scene when they were reviewing the tapes. He's like, wait, can you play that tape back again? Mm-hmm. And like, mm-hmm. and he's like, can you pause it right here, like, or just go frame by frame? And there was like a single frame where like Jack's dead wife, dude, I'm getting fucking chills just talking about
creepy.
It Jack's dead wife is like standing behind him with her hand on his shoulder, and he's like, wait, what the fuck is that? And then things go fucking nuts, right?
Yeah,
like,
dude,
he's a full-on believer, and it's like, it just, it, the movie does this like this like really good like cast and release kind of thing where like it reels you in and then it's like, oh, it lets you go a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. And then it reels you back in and like you're like, oh, I'm just fucking around. And then finally it reels you all the way in and you're like, what the fuck's happening? This is nutso.
It does that so well too. And like that scene where that frame where he sees his wife is crazy, mm-hmm. because then it cuts back to Jack and for one frame you can also see her hand in real life on his shoulder. Yeah.
Right.
And that's what got me. I was like, what the fuck? She's actually there, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, then shit goes crazy, man. I mean, Lily gets like shocked by the TV and the electrical cables above her, and she becomes like, you know, electrocuted essentially. And the current like pulls her in half, dude. Splits her head right down the middle, and she's a fucking crazy demon at this point, with like burning eyes and everything, and her head's cut open, which is brutal. And immediately, like, Gus pulls out his cross, and he's like, you know, may the power of Christ compel you.
Yeah.
Immediately, dude. And I was like, Gus, what are you doing, man? Yeah. That's a demon. And he gets killed, you know.
He blows up fucking instantly.
He gets his fucking neck snapped, and he gets thrown through the table, which is brutal. It's like, bye, Gus, you're dead.
Yeah.
And then of course, Dr. June Mitchell, she tries to stop Lily like she normally does with her little pendant. And the demon starts choking her out with the pendant. Mm-hmm. She gets suspended in air, and she's just, like, getting choked by it. And I think it, like, rips her throat open with it. She's, like, bleeding everywhere. So she's fucking dead. Jackich gets, like, blasted back against the wall. So he's, like, out of the picture. Mm-hmm. But Carmichael Haig is like, holy shit.
he's a believer now all of a sudden.
He's a believer now. He's like, holy fuck. And he starts, like, praying, and that's not working. And then he pulls out his check. $500,000 check, and doesn't the demon just like
melt
burn him.
Him
to death?
Just fucking melts him, dude. Yeah,
hell yeah, dude. He gets Cronenberg, man. He gets fucking turned into guts, and he just gets melted. And Jack just runs through the back door and escapes, right? But this is where the movie fully changes, and this is the part that do you not like this part?
Because it's not that I don't like this part. I really like this movie. I want to be very clear. I'm going to rate this very high. Spoiler alerts. I'm rating it high. I like this movie a lot. It's just like this is kind of where it. I just have questions about it, and maybe you know we talk through it. Maybe I like the movie more. Maybe I end up giving this movie a one. I don't know, But yeah, we get like another exposition of, you know, or not really an exposition. It's kind of like a Jack Delroy through time kind of thing. We see him at kind of at Bohemian Grove. We see his relationship with his wife. You see kind of how that's falling apart. You see how he'll do anything for fame. It's putting him through all these situations to where he has to eventually, I think it was kill his wife, right? Like his wife's begging to be killed. Like she can't live anymore. Just please take that knife and fucking kill me, right? And he does. But then everything kind of zooms out. And now Jack has got the body of split Lily, murdered with a knife. And everything is like this bloodshed everywhere, and it's just him now, right?
Yeah.
And then it ends.
Mm-hmm.
So, my question is, actually, I think I know it. I think I know what happens. Hmm. I think I get it. But I want to hear from you. What do you think? What happened? What's led us to this moment?
So it's really weird. There's a few things I want to say about this whole part, because this part gets weird. It like fully drops the whole like camera, a studio act, and it becomes a film. Like it changes, the colors change, the quality changes. It's no longer shot in a studio. It's kind of like surreal the way they shot it. So it's walking you through the life of Jack, like you stated. Right. It's like how he got there. And like you said, it's showing all these different parts of his life. But the ultimate thing is, it's pretty much confirming that the Grove part and the Mr. Riggles part, they are connected somehow. Like whatever weird demon ritual shit that was going on with the Church of Abraxas and his cult, you know, his retreat for rich people, they're connected in some way. And so this is just like his whole life flashing before his eyes leading up to the moment where he had to essentially sacrifice his wife to get the fame he truly wanted.
Okay. Right. Okay.
And that's what I got from it.
That's kind of how I feel too. So he made, it's like one of those monkey paw deals, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he wants fame. He wants to have better ratings than Johnny Carson. That's what he wants, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Makes the deal for that. But what gets him there is going to be that monkey paw.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
that's a good way of putting it.
It's the sacrifices that he has to. And I think even Lily says that, like, you're going to be famous. Like,
yeah, I love that part.
This is
so much.
Going to make you famous, right?
Mm-hmm.
But maybe Jack wasn't as specific as he needed to be on like why he's going to be famous. He wants his show to be famous, and that's what's happening. His show will be famous. His wife mm-hmm. dies. His rating drops. His rating goes back up when he comes back, and then having Lily on, it's going to skyrocket him. But it's going to skyrocket him because he's a murderer.
Mm.
So the last scene is Jack with Lily in his arms. Everybody's dead around him. And he's holding the knife that stabbed Lily. So is that what we're meant to believe, is that Jack is now like a murderer? And that's why he's famous?
I think that's kind of what they're implying, okay. Dude, is like... I really love that you brought up that part because I have it in my notes right here. Mm-hmm. It's like one of my favorite things is she does state that, hey, you will be famous after tonight.
Yeah.
And it's pretty much because like everything that led up to that point, you know, it was just him trying to get fame. And he is. I mean, like his show just pretty much broadcasted that all of it's real. Demons are real. Mm-hmm. All these people were killed on live television. So it's going to change American culture in the world forever after that. The whole world knows that demons are real now and that people were murdered on live TV. And of course, he ends up committing murder. He kills Lily on TV as mm-hmm. well. And at the very end, when he snaps back and it goes back to like the studio angle, he's just like, it was a dream. I'm awake. Mm-hmm. It's a dream. I'm awake. I'm awake now. Something like that along those lines. And he's fucking in shock as right. there's a dead girl in his hands. So he did kill her. I mean... I think he's going to be famous for a lot of reasons. He just, it's a double-edged sword, dude. He wanted what he couldn't have, and he got what he wanted, but it wasn't exactly what he asked for. You know, he right. lost his wife. He lost his closest friend, Gus, is dead now.
Mm-hmm.
He lost everyone else around him. He's left by himself with his wish granted.
Right.
Yeah.
So I love this movie. I really do like it.
Hmm.
But the whole premise of the movie is... these are the backlog tapes. Like, this is what yeah. really happened that night. Right? It's like a Blair Witch thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, we're seeing everything. So, this is the holes I have. I still really like... I want to clarify. I like this movie a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But we're experiencing it as almost a third party. We're not watching it live. We're watching tapes of tapes. Right? Mm-hmm. So... how could the hypnosis work on us, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's like one little plot hole. Like, we're seeing behind the scenes footage, so that's like, so now it's like raw tapes that now has some editing to them, which mm-hmm. I didn't mind. I didn't mind that part of like behind the scenes. But we're also seeing that kind of like flashback with Jack at the end of the movie,
mm-hmm.
but also we're watching this as something that didn't get aired, right?
Like this, everything that was in his head,
right? Like that yeah. can't be aired because we're not supposed to see it because we're supposed to be watching a like a secret tape of what actually happened that night.
Mm-hmm.
So we really shouldn't be seeing that. At all, we shouldn't be seeing, you know, what's not happening to Gus mm-hmm. as well. It's like, so some of it is like between the live footage of like what America saw and then stuff that was in Jack. It's just, it kind of falls apart. And that's why I said, for me, it jumped the shark when Gus started ripping open his stomach, because I'm like, well, it said in the beginning of the movie, it's like, this is a tape of something that actually happened that's been in the archives, and they're finally releasing it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where it jumped the shark for me, because like, I still had that like idea of like, oh, this is all like behind the scenes footage and something that maybe didn't air. But also, it was airing live?
Yeah. It was airing live.
So it was airing live, and we also have a secret tape that didn't get aired.
I think, yeah.
I'm thinking the weird too much part. Into like, it. I know. I really enjoyed this movie. I liked it a lot. I really, really, really liked it. And it had everything to do with the characters and the idea behind it.
Mm.
But once you start thinking about the movie, it starts kind of falling apart for me.
Yeah, I could see where you're coming from. I'm not sure how to answer that, because it is kind of established almost like documentary style up front, because they have the narrator explaining what was going on.
It's found footage. I mean, it says straight away, this is found footage.
Yeah, and I mean, there's the narrator kind of explaining the life of Jack and kind of giving you a preface of the way the world was when this aired. So. Mm-hmm. I think that's where it gets a little weird, but that's kind of okay, because it's supposed to be like this strange, like, I think the way they're trying to portray it is it's supposed to be this weird, like, avant-garde experience.
Right.
Like, we know it's supposed to be a documentary, but now as the audience, we're kind of drawn into what it was occurring.
Right.
I think that's part of the mysticism of it. Otherwise, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Otherwise, like, there's so many plot holes in terms of, like, why are we watching a documentary than seeing the inside of this guy's head, his suffering, his sacrifice, and then the behind-the-scenes footage. So I think it's just, it's supposed to be like a little bit of a ride for us as an audience.
Right.
You know?
Right. And I mean, I went on the ride, and I loved the ride. But it's just like, when you think about it, it makes it hard to kind of like really grasp what's happening.
But, yeah.
Yeah. All in all, I really like this movie. I mean, it's just... visually, it's really beautiful. I like the 1970s like grain that they put on it. I think the 1970s filter. The wardrobes were awesome. The acting was amazing. All the characters had a purpose in this movie, and they stuck with that character the entire way through.
Oh, for sure, dude. The whole time. Well, let's see. What can we rate this one out of? What are you thinking?
Oh, I didn't think about this. This all happened so fast. Let's rate this out of. Let's pour one out for Gus. Let's rate this out of 10 Gus stage hands.
10 dead Gusses.
10 dead Gusses. Let's write this out of 10 dead Gusses.
Oh, my God, dude.
That Gussie. What are you feeling?
How many? Oh, my God. How many
dead Gussies? Let's write this for the Gussies. 10 Gussie Ussies.
How many 10 Gussies are you going to give this?
I'm going to give, honestly, I mean, I know we don't do fence sitting here. I was going to get this an 8.5, so I don't want to do this. Is going to be the highest rating I've ever given a movie on this podcast.
I mean, what's wrong with that, dude? There's nothing wrong with
that. I'm going to give this a 9, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess.
9.
I guess I'm going to have to give this a 9.
I guess I'll give it 9 Gussies. I mean, I get it, dude. There's nothing wrong with rating a movie high. That's half the fun when you find one that you click with, right?
And it's only like, missing one because of the weird fucking plot. The existential plot holes that I gave this movie.
Yeah. No, I mean,
that's the only reason why I'm not giving this a 10 is the existential plot hole.
I totally get it. I mean, like, I think that we were supposed to be going for a ride, and like maybe there's like some weird like a weird like a different angle that we're not like looking at it from, where it's like maybe it's supposed to be like we are supposed to be in Jack's mind the whole movie, and it's all kind of just like portrayed as how he sees himself in his head, and he's crazy. Maybe that's the whole angle that we're just missing or something, but I'm not sure. You know, maybe it's just like Jack's mental breakdown before he kills Lily, and we're seeing like the fake narration and like his story up to that point, you know, because it paints him as like a Hollywood sweetheart, like you said, you know, him and his wife and everything. So maybe that's what we're not getting, and I'm curious to like view it again and like go read comments now online.
Yeah,
now that we watched it. But yeah, dude, I'm with you, man. I'm actually gonna give this movie an 8.
Nice. Okay.
I really liked it, dude. I thought it was super well done. I love the aesthetic. I love the acting. Everything about it was super great. I actually really like the hypnosis scene, like I was telling you. But I totally get where you're coming from. If it takes you completely out of it, where it's like, how does that work in that scenario? But yeah, dude, this is fucking awesome. Like I was like, man, this movie's getting a lot of hype right now. Maybe it's just hype to be hype. This movie's fun. This movie's just a fun horror comedy movie. It does. And aesthetically, it's done like perfectly. It like nails the late 1970s, and I'm into it, man. I can't recommend this movie enough. It was a blast.
Yeah, you know? And it's on Shudder right now. So if you have, you know, a Shudder subscription, it's free for you right now. Like,
it was, you can watch playing it four in theaters, times, and now it's on Shudder. Yeah, dude, I waited for it. We talked about it last episode. I was like, oh man, drops on Shudder, cannot wait. And and you messaged me about it, and we already had plans to watch it. So I was like, I dig it. It's great. Such a good movie. And everything about it aesthetically is just dialed in. So heck yeah. I hope that this crew, you know, makes another one. I mean, obviously it's going to be very different than this. This is kind of like a one and done. You can't just pump these type of movies out, but, so killer, and everyone should go check it out.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, everybody can check it out with, you know, a free 30 days with code FINALBOYS. So there's no excuse for you not to watch this movie. You got a free 30. You can watch this in 30 days. You know? Yeah. And just to be clear, it's not that I didn't like, you know, the Carmichael Hay Gus scene. It's just that, like, that's when that's like the only time that I thought about the movie. Of it being a movie, and I'm like, wait, what the fuck? You know,
what's going on here? Yeah. Completely changed like perspective. And
like, I'm like, how is this happening? I was in my head for sure. And luckily, I didn't watch this movie thinking that we were gonna rate it. So like, I think I might have been a little bit more critical of it. I watched this movie as like as just someone that wanted to watch a horror movie that was getting a lot of hype at the time. Yeah. In theater. I watched this in theaters, yeah.
Heck yeah, dude. Yeah, I totally get that. This was just something that I think we were going to see either way.
For sure. We were destined to see this, for sure.
Yeah, it's just one that we were going to jump on. But yeah, man, awesome movie. Go check it out. But we did survive another night, a late night with the devil. If you want to go ahead and check out The Final Boys, where can they find us on the internet, dude?
Go to www.thefinalboys.com. You can listen to us wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Obviously that's what you're doing right now, but tell your friends. And if you're liking it, just give us a 5-star review on iTunes or Spotify or, you know, wherever you happen to listen to us.
But yeah, dude, I mean, you can always check out Dustin at Your Friend Dustin on Twitch and YouTube. He's always creating content on there, which is awesome. If you're into gaming, check him out. Go bug him. Talk about horror movies and Warcraft.
Mm-hmm. But, don't talk about horror movies. Not when I'm working. Talk about Warcraft.
Yeah.
Only don't talk. About when I'm not doing Final Boy stuff, do not talk about horror movies because I do not want to work. I'm just kidding.
He's just doing Warcraft. Yeah. So if he's Warcrafting, talk about Warcraft.
Yeah. But nothing else.
Yeah, man. Nothing else.
I don't know about your day. Like, I don't want to know about, you know, the fucking breakfast you ate or what song.
Yeah, food you had.
Yeah.
What your dog's doing right now.
I don't care. I don't even want to know you have a dog. I want you to just be a fucking blob listening to me talk about World of Warcraft. I kid.
So yeah, check him out. He's kidding entirely. But yeah, we survived another one, dude. We'll be back pretty soon. I feel like there's a decent amount of horror movies coming out right now, which is weird for spring.
I know. I didn't even know about Abigail, honestly, when it came out.
So. Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, I feel like there's a bunch of horror movies on the horizon, which is kind of wild. But yeah, we'll be back soon with some more. And maybe we'll watch Winnie the Pooh too, Blood and Honey, you know.
Oh, wait for that. That's like, we can't get that in theaters anymore. It's over. I don't know where to find that movie. I want to see it.
I know, right? They did a quick weekend, and they're building up their entire child nightmare universe, yeah, is what they're doing. Okay. So we'll have to watch them all, and hopefully Thanos shows up at the end, but we'll see. We'll see. All right, guys. We'll catch you in the future.
Goodbye. Okay,